Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You're listening to DraftKings Network.
You're tuned in to the Ross Tucker Football Podcast, guiding your gridiron journey, none other than your host, former NFL lineman, Ross Tucker.
Oh, yeah, it is. But it's not just any Ross Tucker Football Podcast. It is a teaching tutorial Thursday, presented, of course, by DraftKings. That means Greg Cosell is in the house, the civilian GOAT, the NFL Films legend. Cannot wait to talk about this stacked, I mean stacked, receiving core for the draft. This group of receivers, I mean, there's probably going to be at least three in the top 10. We'll get to that with Greg momentarily. I am on vacation, so I did not have a chance to pick the winners. So I'll pick them when I get back from vacation. That's a spread the word winner via social media, at Ross Tucker NFL, at Ross Tucker Pod. Love those of you that take advantage of any of our sponsors, like WestshoreHome.com/Ross. And then the YouTube shout out, YouTube.com/Ross Tucker NFL. Shout out to today's patron of the day. That is Robin Messenger, Patreon.com/RT Media. Let's get to the GOAT. It's Big Show time.
The Big Show.
Okay, Greg, it is thought to be a really good wide receiving group in this year's NFL draft. We did quarterbacks the last couple weeks, which was great. Now we dive into quarterback. I think I saw somewhere where somebody said, it might have been Daniel Jeremiah, who I really respect, said,
yeah, me too.
If you went away from positional value, if you just went on grades on the board, you can make an argument that the top three players in the draft are receivers, Greg. I can't ever remember that being the case. And I think with 7-on-7 and, you know, spread offenses, and I think a lot of these guys used to be quarterbacks, used to be running backs. I think nowadays more and more of these young men are being put at wide receivers earlier in their life and really focusing on that, especially with how much money those guys are making in the NFL.
Yeah, I mean, it's a really good class. And you know, there's obviously guys at the top, and then there's a lot of other guys that I think are really, really good prospects. You know, don't forget, we're in a league now, just a very quick point because we want to get to players, where, you know, I think it's hard to put guys in a box the way we used to. You know, oh, he's a slot guy. There might be one or two of those guys, you absolutely say that, but the way teams in the NFL now, with their formation diversity and multiplicity, with the use of motion, it's a lot different now. It's not, oh, he's this, he's that, that's all he can do. The NFL game is ever changing from an offensive perspective, and you know, you can't put these guys in a box the way you used to.
All right, so let's dive into these guys. You know, it used to be, Greg, most of the year, it felt like, you know, there was a clear number one guy, a clear guy coming into the year, probably would have been the number one guy if he was able to go pro a year ago.
Right.
Marvin Harrison Jr. But it feels like, you know, there are other guys up there, whether it's Malik Nabers from LSU or Rome Odunze from Washington that people think are every bit as good or right up there with Harrison. So when you looked at this group, was there a guy or guys that jumped out to you?
Well, I think Marvin Harrison's the number one prospect in this draft class. I think he's one of the better wide receiver prospects we've seen in a long time. So to me, he would be number one. I mean, he understands route running. He understands how to set up corners and attack them. You know, by that, what you often mean when you say that, so people understand, if you want to get a corner off his spot or you want to get his body turned, those two things then allow you to dictate how you're going to separate from him and allows you to separate. So it's getting him off his spot or getting his body turned in one direction or the other. Marvin is really, really good at that. And keep in mind, he's 6'3". You know, he's got a sudden explosive burst on vertical routes. Doesn't look like he's a burner because he's so long and his stride length is so easy. I don't put a lot of into the 40-yard dash times at the combine, and he may not even run, but he's going to run at some point. But I'd be curious what he runs just because it looks so easy. I mean, he's smooth, but he's subtly sudden. And he's a little twitchy for a guy that size, and he catches everything. I mean, this guy's a three-level guy, you know, three-level explosiveness. I mean, I think he's the best receiving prospect in this class.
So it's interesting, Greg, because just out of curiosity, how does he compare to his dad? He's obviously a lot bigger.
He's a lot bigger. Yeah, he's a lot bigger. I think, you know, Marvin Harrison Sr., there was a snap to his movement because he was smaller that Marvin Jr. doesn't quite look like that because, you know, he's so big and he's so long. So he looks different. That's why I mentioned the 40 time, because I think his movement is deceptive. Like, I think he's deceptively explosive. But it doesn't look like that because he's long and it looks easy.
But, so I mean, there's like size. A knock, or I mean, if there's a reason why teams would take somebody over him, Is it the concern about long speed or explosiveness, Greg?
Well, for me, I don't have that concern. Now, I love Malik Nabers. He'd be my number two. I think he's the second best prospect in this class behind Marvin. He's a guy that's played outside and inside. I mean, he's got a complete receiver skill set. He's got really high level physical traits. He's super competitive, really tough kid. You know, there were times he made me think of Debo when he had the ball in his hands with his run after catch presence and his aggressiveness and his physicality. Another guy that worked all three levels of the defense effectively. You know, I think at this point in time, he needs a little work on sort of the nuances of route running. I think he relied almost exclusively on his high level physical ability to both defeat press and run routes. But I think it's all there in his body. I mean, I think he's a really high level prospect. I did him last summer before you started to hear a whole lot about him. And I loved him watching him last summer, and nothing about 2023 and his tape changed that for me.
Is he a better athlete or more explosive than Harrison?
He's built so differently, so that's a really hard question. Because Marvin is so long and easy in his movement that it doesn't look like he's explosive and it doesn't look like he's working. But Marvin, to me, as I said, is subtly sudden and twitchy. Nabers looks more sudden and twitchy because the body type is different.
I know I don't like to have you force it, so I'm just curious. Is there any guy, because you mentioned, you know, at times made you think of Debo when Malik Nabers is running with the ball. Is there a guy that Harrison's like in the NFL? Like, when you think of Harrison, is there a guy like that right now? I don't want to put you on the spot. So if you can't think of one, don't worry about it. I'm just thinking, you know, for you know, we have listeners, Greg, that don't watch college football.
Oh, I know.
You know? So I mean, it's kind of like, is there a guy playing right now? Devontae Adams.
Say this is apples to apples. But I think a guy that I absolutely loved coming out, and I think he's got ridiculous ability. He's got other issues, which Marvin does not have. But, I mean, a guy that might come to my mind would be George Pickens.
Oh, interesting.
6'3", you know.
Yeah.
Another guy that kind of moves very easily, you know. But, again... I know some people, you know, who I respect. I know one person in particular that has Malik as the number one player in the draft, you know, Malik Nabers. Now I think Marvin's a better prospect, but I love Malik Nabers.
And you think Marvin's a better prospect primarily because he's got a better understanding of the route running stuff, whereas
Malik's not as nuanced. When you watch him, the subtlety and the detail with which he plays stands out to me.
I would say this too, Greg. I guess there's other good receivers at Ohio State, but man, for 3 years, T. teams were trying to stop him, and it seems like nobody ever did. Whereas for Neighbors, he also has another first-round pick, although I guess, you know, Harrison had Ibuka as well, but I don't know. It just teams did everything they could to try to take away Harrison. They still couldn't.
Well, let's you know, since you just mentioned it, and again, because I'm, you know me, I'm not a list guy per se. Let's look at that other LSU wide receiver, because he's a really interesting guy. This kid's going to be 6'3 and a half, 6'4. I mean, I think he's an ascending talent. I mean, he's a long, smooth, Brian Thomas, by the way, I might not have mentioned his name, Brian Thomas. He's a long, smooth athlete. He's got accelerating speed to run by and get on top of corners. There's no question he's a vertical dimension. He seemed to find that extra gear when the ball was in the air, which is really important on vertical routes. He was fluid for that size. You wouldn't call him sudden and explosive, but there was a really easy gliding feel to the way in which he moved that really made him look deceptive. You know, there were times I saw him and thought of T. Higgins, you know, with the size and the length. Thomas has home run ability, size, stride length. I think he's, you know, again, it's hard for me to say, well, year one, he'll do this. He may not be a big time, you know, player year one, but I think he's an ascending player, and I was really fascinated by his tape.
Man, and we talked about this a couple weeks ago with Jaden Daniels. No wonder they put up those numbers. Two first-round wide receivers and a first-round quarterback. That sounds pretty good.
Yeah, and they got a tight end who's actually Jason Taylor's son, who's going to probably be a top 40 pick next year. But anyway, let's talk about Roma Dunze. Now he's
One. It's interesting because you went right to Harrison, right to Neighbors, but not Adunze. Tell me about
just
him.
Just as we were talking, that you mentioned the LSU, you know. So again, it's not an order here. Adunze is another really strong prize, and you know, another big guy. That's the thing. You got a lot of big guys. Not everyone, but a lot of big guys. Now this guy, another guy with high level traits, and he's a contested catch guy. Great hands. Caught the ball away from his frame. Made a ton of contested catches, both on the sideline and in the middle of the field. Really contorted his body extremely well to adjust to throws, you know, whether it's back shoulder, whether they were poorly thrown balls. He was phenomenal going up and getting the ball. He's very smooth, made everything look easy. I wouldn't call him a true vertical guy, although size can sometimes compensate for that, because even if he's covered on a vertical route, he can go up and get it. And I don't think the ability to make contested catches can be overstated. And just a very quick aside, the NFL game now, a ton of teams line up in 3-by-1 sets, meaning you have three receivers to one side and a single receiver to the short side of the field. We call that guy the boundary X. If you don't have a good boundary X in today's NFL, it's very, very difficult to have a really good passing game, because that receiver is going to get a lot of man coverage. Even if a defense is playing zone, they very often lock the boundary X in man coverage. And you have to have a receiver who can win versus that man coverage. I think Adunze's ability to make tough, contested catches will really serve him well in that regard.
So, Greg, my antenna goes up when I hear you say contested catch guy, because I think, well, why isn't he getting more separation in college? Why isn't he open by more? Because I've seen that with guys in the NFL, that they're great college contested catch guys. It doesn't carry over to the NFL. Is there a concern there that he's has to make so many contested catches, that he's not getting as much separation?
Well, it's funny you say that, because we spoke about that a lot when Drake London came out of USC. Another guy who's 6'4", 6'5", made a ton of contested catches in college. There was a concern as to whether he could separate, and he's shown the ability to do that enough. You know, again, it's a bit of a sliding scale, Ross, because, you know, they are so good at the catch point. I mean, there's really three things with wide receivers, Ross. And again, I'm simplifying, but it's can you beat press? Can you separate at the top of your route stem, and the catch point? It's those three things are really, if you're going to reduce it to its simplest terms, you know, receivers, if you're going to call a guy a really good prospect or say he's a really good NFL receiver, he's got to be able to do those things. He's got to beat press. He's got to win at the top of the route stem and the catch point. He's got to catch the ball. So you know, my sense is Adunze can do that. He might not be the best separator in this class, but like Drake London, I think he'll do it enough.
You know, we're 12 minutes in, 13 minutes in. We still haven't talked about Keon Coleman, Greg. And, man, watching Florida State a couple times this year and the highlights, that guy was outrageous on some of the plays that he made. What did you see from Keon Coleman from Florida State?
Well, I didn't love his tape, I guess, as much as some. In fact, there was another receiver, another big receiver that I really, really liked. But we'll do Coleman first. Coleman, to me, I think he's going to be a little polarizing. Another guy, he's got size, he's got length. When he had free access, he could really cover ground quickly into his vertical stem. He certainly could attack the intermediate and vertical levels of coverage. I think his play speed was kind of average based on tape. I didn't think he had a real burst or second gear. There were times he showed excellent hands. He made the kinds of catches you just spoke about where, you know, the ability to snatch the ball away from his frame. He made a few special, you know, highlight type grabs. But there were too many throws in which he dropped the ball in traffic. And those are the kinds of crowded environment catches he's going to have to be able to make consistently in the NFL. I think there's something there that there's more to unlock with Coleman. There's definitely a looseness within his body that's there to be developed, but I think it may take some time, and I'm not 100% certain that it will happen. I don't know. I kept going back and forth on him, to be honest with you, Ross. I struggled with him. When I say struggle, I don't mean I didn't like him. I couldn't decide when I was done whether I thought he was a really good prospect or I wasn't sure.
Who was the other big receiver that you wanted to talk about?
The other guy whose tape I really, really liked was Adonai Mitchell out of Texas, a transfer from Georgia. I really like this kid a ton. Another big kid, strong, solid frame, great hands. He ran a ton of in-breaking routes at Texas, so you know he can work the middle of the field effectively. He's got short area quickness. He's got burst to create separation. You know, he's more of a speed cut guy, as most big guys are, than a sink your hips, get in and out of breaks route runner. But I thought that there were clear reps where he showed a more refined sense of attacking corners. As I said, getting them off their spot. He showed some shake and quickness to create separation. He had some really good routes against Alabama, against Kool-Aid McKinstry. You know, I really, really like this kid. It would not surprise me, and again, not knowing the kid, so I don't know if there's any red flags, it would not surprise me if this kid ends up being a top 10 or 12 wide receiver in the league as he develops, as, you know, as he plays in the NFL.
Wow. Anybody else, Greg, that we definitely need to get to, whether it's Troy Franklin or Roman Wilson or
there's
Brendan Rice?
Unfortunately, receivers, we could do this for 3 hours, Ross. The guy who fascinated me was Ladd McConkey from Georgia. So I'm going to say something here that I hope people understand exactly what I mean, and they don't. Their immediate response is, oh, you're crazy. McConkey reminded me of Cooper Kupp coming out of college. Okay, I don't want people to say, oh, no, Cooper Kupp, he won the Triple Crown. You know, you're nuts. That's not what I'm saying. You know, Cooper Kupp ran a 4.6 240 at the combine, okay, with a poor 10-yard split. And we know he's gone on to be a pretty darn good NFL wideout. But he played at a small school, and, you know, that's – McConkey played at a big school. He played at Georgia, and he was beating SEC corners with no problem at all. He's a really terrific route runner. I really liked Ladd McConkey's tape.
Yeah, that's interesting. Because he looks faster than that to me. Although, Cooper Kupp looks fast when he plays too.
Yeah, I know. And again, that's what you get into with play speed versus time speed. Kupp plays clearly faster than 4.62. And by the way, I wouldn't be surprised if McConkey runs under 4.5 or in the 4.5 range because he plays fast.
Greg, fantastic stuff. I know there's a lot more receivers, and maybe as we clean things up over the next few weeks, we can get to more of them. But we talked about a bunch. Always appreciate the conversation. Fantastic stuff. We'll continue next week. I don't know if we'll do tight ends or running backs, but we will keep it rolling. Check him out on social media at Greg Cosell. I'm at Ross Tucker NFL. Thank you so much, Greg. Really appreciate it.
Thanks, Ross.
love me some Greg Cosell, just like I love me some Labatt Blue Light. If you check out my Instagram, and I guess maybe my Facebook and Twitter a little bit, at Ross Tucker NFL, been on a pretty good run of having daddy sodas at some of the ski resorts, which have just been awesome. My favorite outdoor activity. I think some of you saw me with my high school friends this past weekend drinking Labatt Blue Lights with my friend, living life to the power of we, always enjoying it responsibly. Beer, Labatt USA, Buffalo, New York.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Tuck's Takes.
All right, Ross, we'll start the Texans. They traded defensive tackle Malik Collins to the 49ers. For a seventh round pick.
Right, and there was another trade as the Ravens sent right tackle Morgan Moses and a fourth round pick to the Jets for a fourth and sixth round pick. That just tells me that the Ravens, by the way, have another tackle that they feel comfortable with and wanted to shed a little bit of salary cap space from Moses. Meanwhile, the Jets just desperately needed somebody that was reliable that they could count on a little bit. Malik Collins is interesting to me. Because I thought he played pretty well for the Texans. That was a little bit of a surprise trade there as the Texans moving on from Malik Collins. The Niners, man, they lose one D tackle like Kinlaw, they replace him right away. The Niners are never going to be short on the D-line.
The rare player-for-player trade in the NFL, Deontay Johnson was traded to Carolina for Dante Jackson, who's headed to Pittsburgh.
Yeah, I guess we had three trades on Wednesday, didn't we? It's trade season, I guess, in addition to free agency season. But, yeah, I think the Steelers, I think both teams felt like they did not want to pay that player the amount they were making, and they were willing to move on from him. Obviously, Carolina desperately needs a receiver for Bryce Young to throw to, and the Steelers really need a corner opposite Joey Porter Jr., so it kind of makes sense.
Few cuts around the league. Mike Williams was cut by the Chargers. Cardinals, they released tackle DJ Humphreys, and the Raiders let go of wide receiver Hunter Renfrow.
Well, Renfrow will get picked up somewhere, and Renfrow is really just a salary cap thing. The DJ Humphreys thing and the Mike Williams thing, that kind of bothers me. I posted about this, Jack, on social media, at Ross Tucker NFL. You know, DJ Humphreys just tore his ACL in December, right? Mike Williams tore his ACL during the season. Tyus Bowser for the Ravens had a torn ACL, didn't play. It's just no one ever talks about this. Like, these guys had contracts. They're under contract for more years. And in the NFL, a team can release them because they're coming off of a torn ACL. Now, they have to be healthy to release them, but the point is the same. They're just not expecting those guys to play as well, and they don't want to take that chance with the money they're making. And I strongly dislike that, but that's the way it is. But that's also why when a player holds out or holds in, they absolutely are doing the right thing to try to maximize the financial security they can get for their family before they're considered damaged goods like these guys.
Jake Elliott, he signs back with the Eagles on a four-year, $24 million extension.
Man, that is a lot of money, especially for a kicker. But you know what? He's probably worth it, man. I mean, the amount of clutch kicks he makes and the difference that makes in the outcome of games, I think Jake's probably worth it. I don't think many kickers are, but he's one of them that is.
Bobby Wagner signed to the Washington Commanders, 1 year, $8.5 million, six of that guaranteed.
Always talk about lifelines. Dan Quinn knows Bobby Wagner well, wants someone to set the culture. Hence, Bobby Wagner gets yet another pretty good payday.
Calvin Ridley heads to the Titans on a four-year, $92 million contract, $50 million guaranteed. They also bring in quarterback Mason Rudolph.
Well, Mason Rudolph, they want a good backup because they're not 100% sure about Levis. The Ridley deal is – that sounds like a lot to me, man. I mean, second highest paid receiver in the NFL at age 30, Calvin Ridley. Does anybody think he's a top five receiver? Does anybody think he's a top 10 receiver? That one – I don't know. That smells like the Titans were a little desperate to me. We'll see. I mean, they needed somebody. They needed a number one. They clearly think Calvin's a number one.
Cardinals signed Jonah Williams for 2 years, $30 million, $19 million guaranteed.
You know what? I'm happy for him. He was not happy when they signed Orlando Brown in Cincinnati, when they moved him to right tackle. But you know what he did? He kind of bit his tongue, went back to work, had a good year at right tackle. Now he gets a really nice contract. Good for Jonah.
Flaccomania heads Indianapolis, 1 year, $8.7 million, $4.5 million guaranteed.
The whole dynamic, I think the Browns felt like they could not keep Flacco in Cleveland because of what a fan favorite he had become. And because as soon as Deshaun Watson played poorly, Browns fans would want Flacco out there, which is kind of wild. But I believe that, and I will always believe that. And I like that the Colts want to make sure they've got a legit backup quarterback. They saw how valuable that was this year with Minshew.
Eric Kendricks pulls a Frank Gore. He decides against the 49ers and signs to the Cowboys instead.
It's funny, I didn't even see the 49ers stuff, but the Cowboys have finally signed someone. I would love to know what Jerry Jones meant by all in. They got major contracts. They need to get to these other guys, these veteran guys. The Cowboys are kind of a contractual mess right now, but at least Kendricks knows Zimmer and can help be an off-the-ball backer. Other than that, big show on Monday. It'll be gigantic breaking down all these moves that happen the next couple days. I think we're done here.
Thanks for tuning in to the Ross Tucker Football Podcast. Make sure to also check out Even Money, Fantasy Feast, and College Draft, all on the DraftKings Network on Samsung TV Plus, YouTube, or subscribe to the podcast on your favorite platform.
Shout out MyFrontPageStory.com. I love sending out autographs to you guys because you're listeners, you're diehards, or maybe you watch, whatever. And I love those of you that get a story for a loved one from MyFrontPageStory.com. Let's do both. Birthday, anniversary, Mother's Day will be here before you know it. Maybe for Easter, I don't care. MyFrontPageStory.com. You got BackOfficeScheduler.com, SteakhouseSports.com, HumanHeadNYC.com, Sporticulture, Pizza Boy Brewing.